The Ireland-Portugal Business Network is comprised of more than 200 member companies based in Portugal and Ireland. These companies are from a wide range of industries and professions and represent in excess of 25,000 people.
So, Nicola, maybe to start with you. In the lead-up to today's conference, I read a book called Ultra Processed People by Chris Van Tulliken. One, two. So in the lead-up to today's conference, I read a book called Ultra Processed People, well worth a read. It's by a guy, Chris Van Tulliken. He paints a pretty grim picture in terms of the global food system, that it's dominated by a very small number of multinational corporations whose priority is perhaps on, you know, first and foremost, on shareholder wealth, on profitability. Their concerns would mainly focus around central distribution. You know, if we have bread, we want it to never have a sell-by date. If we have ice cream, we don't want it to melt. Things that make it easy to transfer from central logistics centers in the world, across the world. So he also speaks about the fact that these, in ultra-processed food, you're looking at food that essentially is a copy of food. It tastes like food, it looks like food, but maybe it's not quite food. What's your take on that, Nicola?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got two categories within foods. We've got first, which is our whole foods that we all recognise, our grandmas recognise, so we've got the eggs, the fish, the nuts, the seeds, the vegetables, the fruits, and then we've got the processed type of foods, but within that I would divide that again into two further stages. So we've got the process where we might cure something or we might add the salt. So an example of that could perhaps be roasted salted peanuts, it might be canned fish. And then we go into this ultra processed food, which really is food like stuff that's made to represent, and like you said, tastes like food. But really, this type of food is more often than not deconstructed, chopped, shaped, formed, put back together again with maybe added sugars, added salt, preservatives, false flavours. And then really it's this kind of chemical composition that would represent food. And so just to give one example of that, we could have on a real food scale a pork chop. And then we might go to the process, which could be ham or bacon. And then we would go to the ultra-processed food, which could be something like hot dogs or Spam, if anybody's aware of that.
And this is all coming against the backdrop of, you know, what I feel seems to be a pretty exciting time within nutrition in terms of advances in our understanding of specifically, from a nutritional point of view, gut health. So the microbiome, the fact that we have about 37 trillion, I think is the figure. God help the intern in the lab that had to count the microorganisms. 37 trillion, that's a big number. Evolving over, about 2.5 or 2.6 billion years. So, you know, when I'm here talking as John Paul, I'm a very small part of me is John Paul and the rest is bug. it's bacteria. So what we appear to know now is that if we feed those microbiome with good, healthy food, what we can do is we can slow down all the, the cancers, the diabetes, improve heart health, cardiovascular health, horrible diseases like Alzheimer's. We can slow all that down if we just feed our body with the right type of food. And yet here we are in a position where the commercial world and these large corporations seem to be working against us. So, Manuela, what's your take as someone who works a lot with industry? A business is a business. It needs to be profitable. It does need, that's how it's successful or deemed successful. If I go to some of these large corporations' websites, you could be forgiven for thinking that they're actually an environmental company. You'll see that they're super into McDonald's, are sponsoring the league in France now. They're very keen that we're very active. So you see all these amazing, we're super pro-environment, we're all about protecting health, we're all about maintaining, being active, but there seems to be a conflict. They say one thing, but perhaps they're not actually doing it.
Okay. Well, when you talk about all the steps of the industry and the safety, I think everything is safe, so every company needs to follow the safety rules. So we cannot say they are selling something that is not safe. According all the regulatory issues, everything. So another thing is how they convince the consumers. I think that is a different way. Because in fact, I think it's, when you think about, okay, we have a McDonald's, how many times a month you have a McDonald's? Once a month, so our microbiota is not going to cry about it. But if you consume every day, that is a different thing. Because what we ask consumers is to have a variety of different types of food, fresh. Everyone can have a specific moment where you can eat more ultra-processed because it's more convenient. But another thing is how many times we are doing it. So I think that is the point. How the companies communicate this information and how sometimes they can force some of good facts that probably are not so good if the consumer are not understanding them as safe or as good. And that, or are understanding as good, but in fact they are not so good if they are applied regularly. And that I think is a problem. I think we need to have a very important education. Education, consumer education for me is the most important because they need to discriminate what is good and what is not. And I think we need also to intensify the rules for the companies on communication. I think that is a very important. I think we have a shift in the European law in terms of functional foods. Everything in 2000 until 2012, we can say everything. Antioxidant, everyone could claim everything. And then finally we have EFSA launched the new rules and now companies are controlled. So the point here, so now it's so hard that even sometimes companies are giving up to submit claims because are very expensive. But the point here is that this EFSA needs also to have this responsibility to communicate, to inform in the right way the consumer. So I think it's the two steps. Restricting all the companies to do this non-healthy communication, if you could say, and also help the consumer to understand better what companies are communicating, and especially educating what should we eat. And then the choice is from the consumer. So I think this is the, because at the end, who is buying the food is the consumer. And that is a very important part. And sometimes we are, the massive information they are submitting every day in the internet, in the supermarket. So retailers also with a huge responsibility to inform the consumers, to give the right information in order they can have the good choice. So I think that is the, is not just one. I think all the value chain needs to contribute to the right moment that consumer can have the right choice. And that I'm sure that the good microbiota will be happy with that.
Yeah. I think it's a real challenge because what you see is, you know, like you say, you just walk into a supermarket in the evening, you know, if we're all under pressure with a very busy life, if you have a family, if you have kids, you know, you need to, you know, get out, do your shopping, get back, cook a meal quick. Also, now with the cost of living crisis, you know, the cost of food is important too, and this ultra-processed food is super cheap. And it's full of all these, you know, I do think it's kind of like whack-a-mole in terms of, you know, they'll, take cholesterol as an example, you know, it might be a particular margarine or food that they'll say actually is, you know, can lower your cholesterol. But actually what's happening is what they're putting into the food to lower your cholesterol is creating another problem. And I suppose it's as you say, education is critically important because when you talk about the microbiome, you know, we're only really starting to understand it. And it's the how dynamic the microbiome is with the food and you put in. So, you know, again, you know, referring to that book, you know, it's talking about, you know, apple juice, you know, or an apple, and you have an apple, you have apple juice, and you have a smoothie made out of just the same apple. So one apple that you would eat normally, one that's a smoothie just made out of you know, a liquidized apple and then a juice, and they were quite different in terms of. Do you want to maybe explain that better? I'm not qualified.
Yes, it's the fiber, it's the fiber content, and so our good microbiome really is our ecosystem, and it's unique to every single person. That one person here is going to have the same microbiome. We've all got different diversifications within us. And for health, we need the balance, and for very simple terms, people refer to good and bad, but there's no real bad unless that proliferates. And so to keep the good bacteria, we need the apple, we need the skin. So when we're eating the fibre of the whole foods, the skin is not for us, or the vegetable skin is not for us. That's actually for the gut microbiome to feed on. That's their food, not ours. And the beauty of that is that actually when we feed the microbiome, then we have a symbiotic relationship. They will then give us vitamins, they will produce us energy, vitamin K, some B vitamins, and also as well help repair our gut lining, our intestinal lining, to keep us safe from intruders. So it's very much a codependency. You know, they need us to survive, we provide a home and food, and obviously they provide us an immune system, and they eat food products that we can't, and in return they give us nutrients and energy. And so when we're looking at that example of the apple and eating as it is with fibre, when we wrap something up in fibre, that also keeps our blood sugar really, really nice and balanced. When we partly digest it, if you like, and make it into a smoothie, we've kind of already partly broken up that fibre, but the gut bacteria would get some benefits. When we put that into a juice, we have completely removed the fibre, so we're just left with a big fructose load, which actually, when we drink that then, could cause problems over the long term for blood sugar and liver. And I think that if we look at the current disease picture that you just talked about, we have got a global health issue. You know, the top three diseases, we've still got heart disease, nothing's changed, so we've still got that. The second one, in terms of global diseases, is all of the cognitive disease, such as dementias and Alzheimer's. And then number three, we've got all different types of cancer. And I think we've got to look now and ask some questions about what is going on, because medical facilities have greatly improved since the 1950s, so we've got the technology at our fingertips. You know, obviously there's more medications, but actually the health of the globe is in serious decline, and the curve of diabetes is going up. So we've already got that picture, we've already been to heart disease, to Alzheimer's, to the cancer, so we've got all these metabolic diseases. You know, and I know that just thinking about the 50s, about when the first processed foods, true processed foods, was introduced, and then in the 70s, they really exploded onto the market with all the, you know, colourful packaging packets. I don't know if anybody else here remembers Angel Delight in the 70s, but what was that? I mean, you know, that was delicious. It was like, I'm always doing that. It was like, exactly, yeah. But what was that? So that's a prime example of an ultra processed food, you know, that's meant to obviously, you know, tickle the taste buds, etc. And the problem is as well, John, they're addictive. They are addictive.
Yeah. You know. I mean, so myself and you, Nicola, I suppose the Ireland and UK diet, I feel like it's heavily influenced from America. And now having moved to Portugal and been here for the last 3.5 years, I think there's like what I quite noticeable differences between, first of all, our diet, but also probably importantly how we eat and how you guys eat in Portugal. And you can see that in very simple ways. I had a colleague that just was over in Portugal for the weekend. He was saying, yeah, like the pace of life over here, right, you know, is a little slower certainly than Dublin city centre. You know, maybe Lisbon and France would be a busy capital like Dublin. But what you don't see here is, you're seeing, you know, maybe I've started to see a couple of Starbucks cups wandering around, but you don't see people rushing around with their coffee cups. You don't see people eating, you know, I don't notice it. When I go into a small shop, I don't see meal deals where it's like a pack of crisps, a sandwich, and a fizzy drink. And it's like, I asked, you know, in Dublin, if you want water, it's not, your option is Coke, or 7-Up, or Fanta, with crisps, with a sandwich, you know? That is no sell-by. But, the other kind of observation from Portugal would be that, you know, we play football on Sunday morning, and you know, occasionally if we wanted to move the time of the football back on Sunday, all the Portuguese are like, no way. I'm like, it's my family time, we're eating our meal, and that's a very important part of the culture here. And I think that's hugely positive. Balliol Market, like the gem of Porto, is closed on a Sunday. And like we think, you know, in Ireland, oh, that's crazy. You know, Sunday is now a very busy shopping day. We need to keep go. And you can see that that pace of life means that you're in that mode of, I need to eat quickly. You know, I need to eat cheaply, quickly. You know, we need to get everyone fed. We've got Uber Eats, we've got Bolt. I heard an example from an American colleague who was telling me that in America, now not only are they at a family dinner, if there is a family dinner, are they just ordering off Uber? But you go, oh, you know, maybe we might order something healthy for the family from Uber, but they're actually individually ordering from Uber. So it's like, you know, you're going to have Mexican, you're going to have Italian, you're going to have McDonald's, you're going to have KFC, and then everyone just goes off and they're on their mobile phones. So I think that cultural thing of not just what you eat, it's how you eat is important. So do you want to maybe talk us through, because I think, you know, in Ireland and the UK, I mean, Ireland as an example has a massive obesity problem. We're second in Europe for our levels of obesity, you know, so, and that finding has increased by 20% since the 90s. So something badly wrong is happening that should be clearly visible. And I think it would appear that it is the consumption of ultra-processed foods. And I don't feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but do you feel that Portugal, with its more Mediterranean diet, is able to protect its Mediterranean diet, or it's also getting consumed by ultra-processed food?
Well, I think you're right. I think when we think about this new food, we are usually associating to also with lifestyle. You know, lifestyle is bringing us a lot of changes in our life. On the other side, we also have culture. And I think Portugal still have the cultural part is still prevailing when you compare about this stressful life. So we still have a lot of families that still have their traditional food and the traditional lunchtime, like usually Sundays, because during the week is harder. But still, people, once they have 2 hours to go to the restaurant, have their normal meal. So I think it's still a very important cultural issue. Another point I think is, sometimes you think that eating alone, fast, it's changing a lot how a product is digested, how each nutrient is absorbed. Because emotion and the way how we are having our meal is affecting a lot. A lot of the good things, they are absorbed or not. So, and all this is combined. I would say that in Portugal, things are changing, of course, because lifestyle is changing everywhere. But I think culture is still there. And I think people, it's important when you have a group, a family. Family is still important. And the group of friends is still important. We still have group of friends that are joining during the weekend to share a good food and still tradition. And when you think about that, I think Mediterranean food is in fact a balanced diet, because we can combine exactly the different types of macronutrients and micronutrients that we need. And this is still a very important part of our country. So then, but that it's a responsibility of to maintain the tradition, and tradition to pass the tradition through the different generations. And also try to convince, and I think I still have my daughter saying, I want to cook as you are doing. And I was doing because my mother, so I think in Portugal they have this tradition to transfer the knowledge of the different recipes. And this, I think, has been maintaining still this Mediterranean, and sometimes we also talk now Atlantic food style, because I think we have both combined, although I would say that both are similar. But I think Portugal still maintains this style. And another part is, even when you do research, and now I'm talking as research, working with companies, what we try to do, the other day we have, for instance, a project currently, we are trying to do food for elderly people that lives alone. And the point here, okay, in some ages they cannot have hard food, so we need to prepare it. But sometimes we forget that people are not doing this harmless movement, we cannot stimulate the appetite. So now also research is helping also to adapt to food, but with all required nutrients. And then sometimes, okay, and now tradition. So what we are doing is looking in different groups of elderly people, what are you missing from your tradition? Is the spicy, is the aromatic plants, is the olive oil. So we are trying to do also some re-engineering, I agree, but is to get healthy products that can be more convenient because some people cannot cook every day alone. So what we try also doing research and innovation is to help companies to create healthy products with no additives, as you were mentioning, or reducing as much as possible the additives in order that they can have adapted food, but pleasant food that sometimes you don't have. And this, I think, when we eat, we need to have pleasure. We need to have emotion. Otherwise, why should we eat? And I think it's sometimes what we are missing in some countries. We are just eating to feed, not to have a moment. And I think it's also important part in Portugal. Everyone is, I think we talk about to have a lunch, to do a business, to do something, but the moment of the food, the table, the family, the friends are still a very important moment in Portugal. And of course, this also helps to have a reduced level of obesity. But thinking about the young people, that is the point. It's sometimes the schools, and I cannot forget it, because we have one of the biggest number of young, especially up to 12 years old, with obesity. And this is not good. And where most of the time they are, in the schools. So schools is also a very important point. So we can have a good container with good food, and then we have a lot of machines with no good food. And that is a very important education, is again, at home, but especially they have good food at home, but they go to the school. So school, also very important point for educating the young generation, and especially provide them pleasure also, because you cannot just give bad food or non-tasty food. So we need to give good nutritional food, but especially also tasty and with pleasure. Otherwise, people are not going to adhere. Yeah. And I think the fries with the fat, they are tasty. They give us pleasure. I mean pleasure. Yeah, fat is giving pleasure. Saturated fats give pleasure. So we need to be aware and always as much as possible to educate the consumer, but especially also help companies to do responsible food with the required nutrients, but with pleasure, always pleasure. Otherwise, it's not good to have to feed.
Yeah, it's difficult because as a young person, for all of us, you know, you these organizations have the best marketeers in the world. You know, you are like, we are sitting ducks to the best of marketing in terms of, you know, I saw KFC where it had an app where you can go on the app, and I think if you throw enough burgers into Colonel Sanders' mouth, you get a free side. So, you know, so all these kids are like competing against each other. So they all go down at lunchtime. Geez, like, this should be, surely that should be illegal, you know? But you know, Nicola, on the, you know, education, so we can say these things like, you know, like education is critically important, but like, you know, who should be looking after this? Like, is this a government regulation that should be stepping in? And I always think, as is the case, you know, we're all, you know, fortunately have gone through their election, you know, we'll all be going to the polls. You know, you've got a government that probably usually has about 4 years. It's a very short period of time to manage a problem that's really going to rear its head, you know, in, you know, 20 to 50 years, you know, when these poor children grow to, you know, if they're lucky enough to make it to 60 to 80, they might get to that age, but they're not going to be able to walk upstairs. Right? So whose responsibility? Obviously, as individuals, we have a responsibility. We have to try and get educated. But there's so many mixed messages. So is it government, or whose task force that should be permanently managing this and increasing people's awareness?
Yeah, I think that's multifactorial, and I think it's got to be that multi-pronged approach as well. So yes, I think government have got to be part of the intent of public education around foods. I think also we've got the manufacturers as well that need to be transparent, precisely to your point there, and what you were saying before. We need that transparency, because if you don't quite understand what you're eating, then how do you know what effect that would have on your health then going forward? And I think we've got a responsibility for the supermarket, those chains, where, like you said, they've got affordability. You know, how can a bunch of grapes cost more than a 40 pack of crisps? You know, so we're just pushing people into it all the time. Often we've got those front-end promotions, haven't we, everywhere. Even when you're queuing up to pay, we've still got those, you know, candy bars and things like that. So it's ultra processed right the way through. And then, like you say, as individuals, I think that for us to kind of get educated, it's just, I think we're all rushing so much and just functioning because we need to get to A and B really, really quickly. And so perhaps we're not thinking, and there's nothing wrong with that because we're thinking about everything else that's going on. But it's almost just like looking at something. You know, if you turn over a snack bar, which seems seemingly healthy, looking at the marketing, where it's got 15 grams of protein, so you think, oh, that's brilliant. But then you look at the back, and actually you also see another 6 added sugars in there. You know, rice syrup, rice bran syrup, you know, high fructose syrup. And so it's just really just having that quick flick across and just thinking, actually, you know, what can I take with me? So I think we've got to have the schools as well. You know, school canteens have got to be overturned, I think, as well, and school education. But so we've got to drive from grassroots, but then we've also got to drive as well from top down and meet somewhere in the middle. And the transparency is really big for me because I think we've mostly got the uniform traffic light system, haven't we, on foods, and it'll obviously say fat content, sugar content, etc. But just because the fats in amber, or the fats in green, doesn't mean that the healthy fats that are in there. You know, we could have those commercial industry oils that actually damage fats. So it doesn't mean that they're healthy, but we perceive it as healthy because we're seeing a green light. And so for me as well, especially with the ultra-processed foods, I would like to see what a percentage on the front of the packaging. So if this is 20% additives, fillers, binders, etc., I would like to see that on the front of the packaging as well from my perspective, because then it's easy on the eye to see straight away, do I want to put that in my body or don't I?
Yeah, I think for me, even personally, you know, I think there would be advances in it, like my Apple Watch, bad day to check it Tuesday after a St. Patrick's weekend, because I can look at my watch, I can look at the health app, and I can see that my resting heartbeat has gone up, possibly due to some alcohol consumption. but I think that kind of immediate feedback of what you're eating, you know, just talk of glucose, you know, continuous glucose monitoring, you can definitely see a time in the future where, you know, your watch will be telling you the results of what you eat. And I think that's probably, you know, certainly from a young people's point of view, I always think where you're able to integrate technology in a positive way, that could be, you know, that could be a solution moving forward. You know, it sounds like, you know, what we're talking about is almost going, we've evolved in a way, we need to go back to the basics in terms of like pure food. You know, what I love about Porto is that I have an amazing bakery for sourdough on my doorstep. I've got an amazing place where I can go and get fresh produce. You know, everything's local. It would be great to see that supported, rather than the big centralized huge supermarket with all this ultra processed food. Again, I'm interested to know how the food system in Portugal is perceived. Do you perceive it as being as strong, that it is healthy? Is there more awareness of the fact that it's like you're linked in with probably what's the most, it looks like it's the most supported from a data point of view, the diet, the Mediterranean diet. Like, do you perceive it in Portugal that you're on a winner here, or that you have a good diet, or?
Yeah, well, I think this is a general trend. I think this, when you talk about this local authenticity is a huge trend in food. So I think people like to identify with the food they are eating, and this is very important in two perspectives. I say, one that is to valorize all the local food and also to promote the local commerce and everything. But on the other side, sustainability. And I think we can combine them, because one of the points we are really highly dependent on external commerce for food in several, I don't know, we import a lot of tropical fruits, and we have fantastic fruit in protein. So people are rethinking, and I think it's what the value chain, the food value chain is doing, is rethinking the system and trying to do more new projects, but doing research, especially joining different stakeholders in the value chain. I can give you an example that was very interesting. Some years ago, Sonai, this is a public case, Sonai did some companies in producing wet, so cereals. Most of the cereals in Portugal have been import, and together also engaging also Superboc and other brewing companies, they start creating a group of producers in Alentejo, where they try to stimulate, and they have a very nice business model where they should pay more than as an imported product, and it was growing and growing. And when there was the COVID, especially then when we have all the war situation without cereals, they can say now, my God, if we would not create that new system, local cereals would be very difficult. So that is a learning process that some other producers are doing. So eat locally, buy locally. So in sustainability, we save a lot. All the decarbonization process is incredible. How can we save when we buy local products? So combining these opportunities to be not so dependent on external markets. Another point is to valorize what we have. Especially also we can decentralize and expand our population to rural areas that sometimes is difficult. So we have so many benefits that now we are working together. And an example, very interesting example, is the legumes. In Portugal, the beans, for instance, were, I don't know, 20 years ago, everyone was producing beans. They almost disappeared. So now in our school of biotechnology, we have groups working with farmers, producers, because legumes is fantastic to retain nitrogen and CO2. So it's like a sustainability is coming, and we are trying to make it more local food, come back with our history, bringing new beans, but old beans and new beans that can be more resistant and can make more regenerative agriculture, and at the same time also create alternative to cereals, because we can have use some of the legumes to replace cereals. So this is the new food system, is to make it more local, is to make it more sustainable, and besides that also to make it more not processing so much, because we can eat locally and avoid the long distance processing to commercialize the product. So I think here we have this, today sustainability is a very important point at all, and I think this part of local and sustainability, I think, is one of the important benefits for the food chain that we are facing now with industries.
Yeah, I think the EU has a very positive part to play in this as well. Because like I was saying, in terms of like if there's a if there's a government in place, and maybe that's limited to 4 years, I feel like you almost need the elders, or you need someone who has a much more strategic, long term thinking about what, like a vision as to what they want the EU in this case to be. And I think like there's a lot of funding available from the EU on that basis. And I think that's hugely positive. Like that seems like they're following what you'd consider to be the right, the right direction.
Yeah.
Nicola, would you positive about the future of nutrition? Do you think that this can be turned around? How do you see it kind of progressing in the short to medium term?
In the short term, I think it's going to be quite a hard shift. It's almost like trying to turn on an oil tanker, so to speak, to really kind of get that, transparency, education. We've had, like you said earlier, the use of marketing. So we've got the Frosties, for instance, and Rice Krispies are all marketed to children. So I think, again, it's this multi-pronged approach that's got to be tackled. I would certainly want to hope, I would say, in the medium to long term, that we can actually make that change. And like you just said now, Manuel, about this locality, it's a government incentive perhaps, giving everybody free seats so we can go around the room, because, join a community allotment and get some land. And that's the self-sustainability. So when we're looking at this, this full sustainability, for me, yes, of course it's planet, but it's also a plate and it's people. And we've got a responsibility to ourselves to obviously sustain ourselves in the best way we possibly can, because otherwise I think what we're going to do is we're going to move a problem from here to there in terms of healthcare, which is already overburdened.
Yeah, and Manuel, in relation to industry, your thoughts on can industry be turned around in terms of realising and accepting that they have a significant part to play, rather than constantly chasing industry around, with regulations. Because if they're always focused on that bottom line for your shareholders, at what point are shareholders, are consumer activism, are we going to be able to demonstrate that this needs to change? Would you have confidence that will change with these corporations? It's probably a matter of time, because I think awareness and education is moving in a direction where people are getting smarter.
I would say yes, because now, some years ago, I think the food system was, or the food chain was, each one was just looking for their own business. And I think now the food system needs to be implemented. So we cannot just see the agriculture, the farmer alone, and then the retailer, and then the consumer, and then the processor. No, we need to see the entire value chain. Otherwise, we need to join people with all the stakeholders to discuss, and that thing is happening. It's incredible. In Portugal, we have very big projects now, PRR and that. So we are discussing and we are engaging from the farmer to the consumer. And I think European Commission is stimulating it. Otherwise, we cannot have a project when we apply to a project if we don't engage all the value chain. And this is because it's difficult to the dialogue is difficult. So it's still even people are learning how to do it, because we don't. Each one is talking talk about how to process. I just understand about agriculture. So now things are changing, and I think this is a very important part, is that finally, especially sustainability, I cannot say that I'm producing waste, okay? I'm sending the waste somewhere, it's not my problem. No, now every stakeholder in the value chain is responsible for each damaging that is being caused. And I think it's a mindset is changing, because this is to survive. If you don't apply this concept, we cannot survive. So we know very well that we are increasing population. We need to increase 70% the production. But if you don't join all together and find the best model, we are not going to survive. So I think now it's not only just an economic perspective that, of course, always is the most important for most of the companies, but it's also to survive in this food system. Okay? And I think things are changing. Some years ago, nobody was caring about the waste, how everything, and this is changing. Another point is regulatory. So if someone tell me until 2030 you need to reduce 50% of your waste, otherwise you are starting paying a lot. People are now joining together to discuss the problem, to find solutions together. So I think regulatory is also always forcing, but especially here is also to survive in this food system, I think.
Brilliant. It's a good good conversation to have right before you enjoy your lunch. So, Arnold will hand out the €20 McDonald's vouchers. So listen, thanks a million. Back to you, Arnold.
Yeah. If any questions? We can take one or two questions. Yeah. If not, no. Okay. Well, let's.
Thank you.
Then where?
Back.
Oh, you.
I find it very, very interesting what you're on about, your obesity and stuff in Ireland. I think I found, I've only been back now in Portugal 4 months, but I think it was Ali and Dibble.
Yeah, I think
about Portugal and the same kind of culture and different stuff like that, but I think we also, especially in school down, as you said, I think especially business and networking and stuff where they are in Portugal, I think we share the same values, but one is very much still slowing down, whereas a little bit more fast-paced.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's for sure, because I think that's definitely one of my takings from living here for just the 3.5 years is versus Ireland. Like I think really sadly, I think in some cases Ireland views tradition as a kind of a backward, you know, like I think we've kind of thrown out a lot of what we had because we think that we're it's not that we're better than that, but we're moving at a much faster pace. You know, everything that Ireland is, and I think when I'm here in Portugal and what Portugal has, so much of what you see, whether it's like we have bank holidays in Ireland, every holiday over here is it's related to a saint of some sort. but I think that thing of spending time, you know, taking the time out on Sundays, time out for your family, time out at lunchtime. Like in Ireland, we're constantly talking about work at lunch. You know, that's not what happens here. It's like you sit down for your hour or your hour and a half and you're not really talking about work, you know? So, yeah, I think there's so much
of... Do you think that's time?
Yeah, yeah. I spent 20 years in Dublin, and that's, I feel very strongly that there's a big, we've lost something in Ireland that Portugal has maintained, and I hope that Portugal can maintain that, so...
This has been a production of the IPBN in partnership with Pink Room. For more information, visit us online at island-portugal.com and on LinkedIn at Island Portugal Business Network. For more IPBN podcasts, find us on Spotify or visit our website for the full list of episodes.